Today's shir is Leilu Nishmas Ganana Bas Aharon Yitzchok Alei HaShalom. Thursday, the 24th of September, Vov Tishrei, Rabbi Yehoshua Posen, the series on Halacha in the Workplace, Part 6, the conclusion on Hilchus Ribis.
Morning. By the title, conclusion on Hilchus Ribis, I hope thinks that by the end of the day's share we all would have covered in its entirety Hilchus Ribis. But the point of this small series is to highlight the main points which crop up very frequently, and also when we come across them we have an idea that there might be an issue. We mentioned in the last year, we discussed the halachas of Heter Iska, what exactly Heter Iska is, how does it work, and what its limitations are. To sum it up basically in one line, is a Heter Iska is an Iska, which means it's a partnership, it's an investment between two parties, and in an investment parties are able to fix whatever terms and conditions they would like to fix, and the terms and conditions fixed in a Heter Iska are such that the investing partner tells the partner who he is invested with that I will not believe you if you tell me that no profit, that the estimated profit which we arranged has not been made, and I won't believe you if you tell me that the capital has been lost, unless you make a shuar and unless you bring edim, as we explained the differences. And there's a clause that says, however, if you pay me the projected profit, which we've worked out to be, we said up to 15%, normally we would allow on a palgam over palgam bekodin, which is really in effect 30%, if you pay me that amount, then I waive any rights I have to assure that we didn't make more, and I waive my rights to any more money that might have been made as well. You pay me that, and then you don't have to pay me any extra money. We didn't have enough time to go into Heter Iska Klali. Heter Iska Klali, concept which probably familiar, probably heard about it. There's a lack of clarity as to what exactly it is. Briefly, in about 1924, I think it was, Bezriel Meir Eger, who was the Rav of Lublin at the time, realized that there was an endemic problem of ribis, that people were being over daily, and he realized that just to tell people you have to write a Heter Iska each time as a transaction wasn't actually working, because people were only writing a Heter Iska when they realized that there was a ribis concern. And we come across ribis concerns, as we've highlighted in the previous shiurim, sometimes when one doesn't even realize it, so one doesn't know to actually write a Heter Iska. So he invented this concept called the Heter Iska Klali. What is it? How does it work? Basically, Heter Iska Klali is a person who signs a contract, a shtar, which is a Heter Iska, which is a general Heter Iska, which is meant to be signed ideally in front of Beis Din, because what it is in effect, it's a Mesiras Meidah. Mesiras Meidah, like for example by Taurus and Dorim, what we've just done, you stand in front of a Beis Din, and you're most of my daughter to a Beis Din, that my intention is, I'm telling you now, for the coming year, any Nedarim that I make, I really don't mean them, they should be bottle and mavutl. Similarly to here, it's as clearly as you go in front of a Beis Din, and you tell the Beis Din, which is written on the contract which you then sign, I am telling you now, Beis Din. And the reason it's done in front of Beis Din is to show that a person really means it. Doing something in front of Beis Din adds extra chashivas to a person's intent. It shows that he's really serious. And he says, I'm being mediya Beis Din, that any transaction which I do, which in any way would have a problem or issue of ribis, instead of being a loan with interest, is really an investment according to the terms of this Heter Iska. So it's meant to be done in front of Beis Din. Ideally it should be done in front of Beis Din. So now how does it work? Be'etzem, at the time when he came up with this concept, it wasn't met with unanimous approval. There were a number of poskim that were a fire against it. Mr. Zalman Meltzer, Baron Kotler, were very stark against Heter Iska Klali. However, most poskim seem to hold that if I have a Heter Iska Klali up on the wall in my place of business, up on the wall means in a place where it's visible and ideally understandable. So therefore, if you're most of the clients who are coming into your shop or your office or whatever it is can't read Hebrew, then you should have a Heter Iska Klali that's in English, because just putting up, you know, writing is a joke. You have up, as so to speak, terms and conditions on your wall. And if in each contract you write, a one line at the end of the bottom of the page, ideally it should be legible and readable, it doesn't have to be huge, that says the terms, this contract is conducted according to the terms and conditions of the Het Iske Klodi on display. So then basically what you've done is you've told them that the terms of this contract are X. If you want to know what X is, have a look on my wall, and there it says very clearly the Het Iske. So it's as if you've actually signed a Het Iske, so to speak, for this particular contract.
What were the objections to these?
The objection to these are, is that since in the end, well, we'll come in a minute to a primary objection, but the other objection is similar. I'm not saying it's on par, because I don't want to laws on end, but you have objections when it comes to Mechiras Chometz, you have objections when it comes to Het Mechira, you have objections when it comes to any of these generalized principles where I sign it on the dotted line now, and then I can carry on writing contract. For example, the main objections were that Pashas Rameh was talking about, even if you don't write on the contract, this is done according to Het Iske, on the wall, you write Ribis, I'm lending you money with interest, and because, you know, 2 years ago you signed in front of Bezen the declaration saying my real intent is that it's Iske, it's a bit of a joke. You've written that in order to, you know, be Yotza, and now you get on with lending the Ribis. That's kilo the thought.
Can you explain the last line? What's the last line of the petition of the whole contract?
The
last line you said the things on the wall. You must write on the last line you said.
No, the last line of the contract, that any contract which you do during the years,
seriously,
you refer in the last line of that contract, which is a normal standard legal contract, and you put in a line somewhere in that, it doesn't have to be the last line, somewhere in the contract you put in a line, the terms of this contract has been conducted according to the terms and conditions of the Het Iske Klodi on display in the office. And no, that doesn't say on the one on the wall. That says in all the contracts which you sign throughout the year. And you're referring to the one on display. Now, Be'etzem, there's no shaila when it comes to regular dealings where there's proper ribis issues. It's definitely l'chachila, possibly even more l'chachila, to write a separate iska for each particular transaction. Then you're covering yourself. It's very clear what exactly is going on. As we mentioned in the last year, even the Het Iske itself is something which one has to really understand what one's doing. So, Kal Vachomer, if one isn't even writing a Het Iske, you're referring in a contract to a client who might or might not be bothered to even come into your office to see what you're referring to. Is Zichel Lechachila to write a separate Het Iske for every transaction that requires on. However, the Gedolim, Moshe Shlomo told me himself, and other Gedolim over the years have said that it's lechachina, it's ideal for every person to write a Het Iske Klodi, not with the intention that he's going to rely on it for the regular transactions, but because there are so many transactions which we don't even realize could be problems, as we've mentioned, whether it's paying credit card bills for other people and all sorts of arrangements which we don't even stop to think about, whether all types of people in all types of areas of life, somewhere along the line you're probably going to come across a ribbis situation that you don't see coming. And therefore, if you've written this Het Iske Klodi, lechachila we will not rely on it, but it's, so to speak, it's belt and braces. At least you've got this to fall back on, to cover you, hopefully, at least according to certain shitters, you've covered yourself. So now, he will hold it works. So Ego held it worked. Because you've written that, you've been Maisim Maidor. When you're Maisim Maidor by Nadorim, right? So then you go out throughout the year and you make a Nezer. Rather we don't rely on it. But there's something there. You've been Maisim Maidor. And my real genuine intent is...
You're saying it should be written in the contract.
Ideally it should be written in the contract. That has to be used to other shitters as well. But he held, Pasha C held, that just if you write it, then you're covered. 47 years ago... It's a disclaimer. The shayla is it? Does it really have any tkifas? Does it hold up?
That would work for credit cards as well.
That would work. Yeah, but one shouldn't rely on it. But it's there as a belt of braces. The chachila one should not rely on a Het Iske Klodi. If credit cards, if you're going to write in a contract, normally with a credit card, as we mentioned previously, there's no contract. So therefore, one should write a proper Het Iske. 47 years ago, Rapada Zatzal wrote a, I don't know how to call it, a tshuva, it was more of a mysterious moidor from the Kedasi Bezen, at the time that was together with L'Havdol Reb Chuna, and L'Havdol Reb Duna, and Darren Posen, and Darren Baumgarten, and they were mostly moidor, they were moidia the olam, that the intention of Reb Eger when he said that people should write Het Iske Klodi, is when you're dealing with a small shtetl, and he told the shtetl, You should all go out and write Hetzis Kekloli. So if everybody's writing Hetzis Kekloli, then the practice, the business that's happening in this shtetl is done under the Hetzis Kekloli. Everybody knows both parties have signed their own Hetzis Kekloli. Now we mentioned in the last year, what is a Hetzis Kekloli? So the Republic explains that a Hetzis Kekloli should really have to be signed both by the Malve and by the Loiva. Why is this? Because if you think about it, each of them is obliging themselves something which otherwise they wouldn't be obliged. The Malve is accepting that if the Loiva pays him X percent, then he's waiving any rights to the Shvuah or to the Edim and any rights to any future money. So that itself is a Kabbalah. He has to sign, he accepts those terms. Otherwise, Be'etzem, who says he accepts it? What makes it binding? The Loiva is accepting to make a Shvuah Chamur on a Sefer Torah, or that he's chayav to pay unless he brings Edim, which Al-Pi Haloch, if he wouldn't have accepted it, he wouldn't have had to go so far. Normally in a regular, when there's no ribbis involved, and we have a problem between shutrin, we don't say to one shutrin, if you can't bring Edim, then you're chayav to pay no matter what. That's not, otherwise imagine what would go on with every problem is in partnerships. So the Loiva is accepting upon himself harsher terms and conditions than what would otherwise be there. So for that you need the Loiva to sign as well, that he accepts it. So Sedra Padva, if you can have a Hetzis Kekloli that's signed only by the Loiva or only by the Malva, then you haven't helped yourself properly, because the other party at the end of the day hasn't signed on the dotted line. So therefore, they wrote that you should know if in any way you rely on a Hetzis Kekloli, you can only do so if you know that the other party has also signed a Hetzis Kekloli. Now again, that is not, I don't think they were referring to when it's referred to in the actual contract. Because if it's referred to in the contract and the other partner signs the contract, so he signed that these are the terms and conditions. It's like writing, the terms and conditions are like whatever it says in the law books on page 36. So fine, you open the law books, page 36, and you see these are what the terms and conditions are. You know, the Haftal, many stories have that this should be governed by according to English law. So you've written in that this is the way we want our contract to be. So therefore, similarly to here, if you've written in, you've referred to it in the actual contract, I don't think anybody's got a problem, but it's some Halach and Maisa nowadays, if you've written in the contract, this is according to the Hetzis Kekloli on display, and it is on display, so they can at least see if they would want to check. So even if they don't check, then Be'etzim should be okay.
Can you be machayim yourself for Shmuel, even though the
Torah
doesn't commit?
Yeah, that we discussed in the last year.
Yeah?
Now, moving on now to the next point. We've got 15 minutes to try and get through the rest of the Hilchos Ribbis. The next point is a it's commonly referred to as Tarsha. It is a halacha which is nagia more to some people than to others. It depends on what areas of business you deal in. There's a Mishnah in Bab Mitzid of Samachay Om Lalev. Ideally, I'll go through inside, but because we're a bit short for time, we'll just basically summarize what it says. The Mishnah gives a very interesting distinction when it comes to pricing. Says the Mishnah, if I am a landlord and I rent out a property, and I tell the tenant, if you want to pay me up front for the year, then the year's rent is £10,000. But if you want to pay me every month, at the beginning or end of the month, then the rent is £1,000 a month. Now it will be £12,000 for the year. So you're giving a reduction if he pays up front, or you could say that it will cost him more if he pays later. Says the Mishnah, this is absolutely fine. No problem whatsoever. Says the Mishnah, what about when it comes to a Mekach? If I'm selling my field, and forget nowadays the exchange and completion which we've been into, let's say a simple case in those days where it was a straight Kenyan, a person comes, he pays the money, he signs the shtar, and he takes ownership of the field. Says the Mishnah, what happens if I'm selling a field, and I tell the person I'm selling it to, if you pay me now for the field, then it'll cost £100,000. If you pay me only in a year's time, it'll cost £1,100. Says the Mishnah, that's also because of Avat Whips. So ask the Gemara, what is the difference between these two arrangements? Both of them, if the first party pays now, they get it cheaper. If they pay later, it's more expensive. So what's an argument? What's the difference between Skewers and Kinyan? Explains them well when it comes to Skewers. We have a cloud. Ain Skewers Mishtalemes El Lebusayf. Rental only has to be paid at the end. That means even though in nowadays, particularly when it comes to rent, you'll normally ask for the rent at the beginning of the month in advance for that month, that's common practice. But Al-Pi Halacha, give me a second to go back and clarify myself, Al-Pi Halacha, one is not chayav to pay till the end. Now, what do I mean by that? That doesn't mean you don't have to pay at the beginning of the month, because you've signed a contract, contractually obliging yourself to pay at the beginning of the month. But the reason why you're paying at the beginning of the month is because that's what you signed in the contract. It's not because you've already reaped the benefits of the rental. Al-Pitera, you only have to pay for renting at the end of the month. So therefore, says the Gemara, really, the actual price of renting this property is £12,000. Because I'm really only have to pay at the end of each month. So if you pay at the end of each month, it's going to be £1,000. So the actual price of renting this property is £12,000. The owner, the landlord, is giving me a potential reduction, if I want to take it up, that if I want to pay up front, I can pay £10,000. Now, since at the time when he's giving me that offer, I'm already receiving the property. He's not telling me if I pay him 2 years before I take the property, that would be a problem, because I'm clearly lending him the money for 2 years. At the beginning of the year, I've got the property, and he's selling me the rights, so to speak, the tenancy rights for this property for the next year, so he's just given me an option of buying it at a cheaper price. There's nothing wrong with selling something at a cheaper price. There's no loan here at all. And the bottom line is, when it comes to Ribis, if there's no area where there could be perceived to be a loan, then there's no problem for Ribis. That is when it comes to rental. When it comes to a Mekach, it's the other way around. If I sell somebody a piece of land, al pi halacha, they have to pay me when they take possession of the land. That's the kinyan. The kohen of the land, they have to pay me for the land. So therefore, that means the real price of the property is £100,000. I tell him, if you pay me now, it's £100,000. And then if I say to him, and if you pay me only in a year's time, it's 110,000 pounds, then basically what I'm telling you is like this. You owe me now, at the time of the Kenyan, £100,000. If you want credit for a year, fine, I'll give you credit for a year, that'll cost you £10,000. So what I'm doing is I'm lending you £100,000 at 10%. That's obviously a problem with Ribis. It's not Ribis Deiraisa, because it's disguised in the framework of a Mekach. It's not in a regular case of a proper Halvor. So it's only Avak Ribis, which has enough Geminis. But in the end of the day, it's awesome.
Every Ribis that's disguised is a Ribis Avak Ribis?
No. A Ribis which is disguised in a Mekach is Avak Ribis.
It can be a disguisable Ribis.
Now, the Mefarshim explain, this is the crux of the halacha. There are obviously various different permutations of it. Let's, for example, you go into a electronic shop, this is where you see it quite often, and you have a washing machine for sale. And they write that the washing machine is for sale, you have 6 months credit free. Right? It says the cost of the washing machine is £500, 6 months credit free. And underneath it says, if you pay up front, then it's 420, right? So is that the same or is that not the same? They're telling you that really the price is 6 months, interest-free. 6 months, interest-free. They've written interest-free, right? But if you want to pay now, they're going to give you a hanocha. So is that the same tucker as the case of the rental or not? So the halacha is, if they actually have that item, if they have the item at the time, then they can sell you the item already now. So they can sell you the item now. That means that if you're taking the washing machine home now, at the beginning of the contract, then really you're having to pay now, because they're giving you the option to pay now for a cheaper price. So although in commercial terms they've disguised it as saying, really the price is later, 6 months interest free, really what they're telling you is, there's two prices. There's a price if you pay now, there's a price if you pay later. Whenever you do that, you've got a problem. If you write there's a price you pay now and a price you pay later, in the end of the day that means that the price that you pay later will be a problem. However, there are exceptions.
But the offer is that you didn't take possession.
No, but when they tell you, you're right, but the price if you pay now is when you take, either way I take it home now.
Yeah, but now you did.
So when I take it home
now. Take possession, then you can have it now for £1,000.
That's right.
If by the in 6 months time it enters free, 1,100.
No, but if I
take possession.
No, but when I take it home, I now owe them the money.
So yeah, then you already fixed the price.
But if I know that what they're telling me is the genuine price when I take it home is £1,000, but if I want to only pay in 6 months, it's £1,100, they're telling me that they're charging me for 6 months credit. Yeah. Even though they've disguised it, but that's what they're telling me.
This is agreed before you take possession.
You're right, so they've agreed to charge you ribis. That doesn't help. Makes it worse.
Yeah.
It doesn't help. That's basically what they're agreeing. They're telling you we've got two prices. Anytime it's clear that there are two prices, there's a problem. Even if it's not clear, even if, for example, all they write is, we charge for this washing machine £600, 6 months interest free. But everywhere else you go in the shop, in the market, all other shops, the same type of shops, I'm not talking about whether there's a higher class shop, low class shop, they sell the same washing machine, where you have to pay up front, and it's £500. So then the Mefarshim say, the Gemara says, if it's clear from the Shuk that the genuine price is £500, and they're just being clever and marking it to 600 and calling it interest free, it's not really interest free, because you can tell they've marked up from the normal RRP, then Takada Lok is also, it's a problem.
It's because they say interest free, if they would have just sold it.
No, none of them write interest free. But yeah,
if they would have sold it at 600, they wouldn't have said nothing. Would that also have been, I want 600 for
it. If they sell it at 600, but don't say that you only have to pay in 6 months' time,
yeah.
If it's done, they put a price 600, that's a different shayla, possibly, if I know. That's nothing to do with the ribbis. But if they're telling you only have to pay in 6 months, by £600, then they're telling you, really, that's what's going on.
By telling you that.
What happens the other way around? Pardon?
Nobody's going to go to that shop to pay £600.
They will, those people who don't have to pay up front.
What do they pay up front?
That's the reason why I'm going to that shop.
Correct. That Hogofer. Yeah, correct. That's exactly the point. Now, what happens the other way around? What happens in Kinyonim, not in shops, doesn't happen so much in shops, what happens in people in the retail industry, what happens when you pay up front, before you receive an item? You pay before you receive an item. So let's say an item is only going to be coming onto the shelves in 6 months' time. The suppliers already, they're short of cash. They tell you, if you pay now, we'll give you a reduction. Right? That's also a problem. Why is it a problem? Because it's exactly the same thing. Why am I paying 6 months before I receive the item? I have to pay till I receive the item. LMI, what I'm doing is, I'm lending you money for 6 months, and because of that, you're selling me the item for cheap. However, if at the time they have that item already in stock, they have it there, just I only want to take possession of it in 6 months' time, but they've got it there, then it's already different. Because then we say, they're already selling it to me now. When I pay 6 months earlier, they're already selling it to me now. Now this gets a bit complicated, we can't go into it, because if they're selling it to me now, does that mean I have to keep that one there on the shelf, or can they sell it and give me a different one? Let's leave that out for a moment. But basically what they're doing is they're selling it to me now, and if they're selling it to me now, then there's no problem with them giving me a different price. They can tell me, I'll sell you this today for £500, I'll sell it to you in 6 months' time for £600. That's nothing, there's nothing wrong with that. There's no halvor bichlal. As long as there's no halvor, then there's no element of a problem.
It's an interest-free loan, though.
But if they've got the item in stock, then Chazal give a bit more leniency. They're prepared to look at it as if they've sold it now.
It's always an interest-free loan.
No, it's not for the loan. It's not for the loan. If I bought it now, just sitting in their shop for 6 months, there's no loan.
Money, so you can consider it as a loan.
I've bought it already. It's mine. I bought it. There's no loan. It's only a loan if I've given you the money on one date and it only becomes mine at a later date. So why have I given the money early?
You give the money early to secure your purchase.
Right.
If it's an interest-free loan, you're not getting any benefit from it.
No, you are getting benefit from it. They're giving it to you for a cheaper price.
No, it's the same price.
No, if it's the same price, there's no shayla here. The whole shayla is only when there's a difference in price. If it's the same price, the shayla doesn't begin. There's no problem with you paying up front money for the same price, you're going to get it later on. Now, I was told late last night, and I haven't had time to run it past any lawyers to understand shat in it, so I'll just throw it out as food for thought. I was told late last night that in some areas it's common practice to have on the bottom of an invoice that you can pay in 6 months, but it says on the bottom of the invoice the item does, I don't know exactly, something to the effect of the item does not become yours until you pay for it. Right. I have no idea what that means, halachically or legally. Let me explain to you why. Let me first explain to you why I have no idea what it means, and then you can tell me what it means. I have no idea what it means because it's a basic understanding that the person who's bought this item, who doesn't own it, is allowed legally to sell it on. Now how can you sell an item which you do not own?
I'm giving you the permission to do that.
But who sold it?
They give you the condition.
What's it? The condition or permission? But how can I give you, I give you permission to sell my product? That means you haven't sold it. I've sold it. Who's actually sold it? That's what I'm saying, it doesn't really make sense, does it?
It only makes sense if the article's in the guy's warehouse and goes bust and claim it back.
So that's a shibud then, that's not the same as saying it hasn't said. Let me prove to you even more. What happens if I buy jewellery? Right? I buy jewelry, and it says on the thing, it says on the invoice or contract. Furthermore, as far as I know, this is written on invoice. It's not written on a contract. So I have doubts that even that legally it's binding.
There's no contract when you buy something.
Okay, okay, fine. It's written on the invoice. It's written on the invoice that this jewelry does not belong to me until I've paid for it fully. And he knows I don't pay for it fully until I've sold it, because that's how I get the money to pay for it. It's sitting in my shop. Halachically, why am I currently on this thing? Now, that's really a completely separate shoe. But if I receive something with the right to sell it, then I've got dinu v'shem esochel. I'm not a shem echinom, because I have a certain hanol. The hanol is if I want, I could sell it.
What about if you want to give us a present to your bike?
And what? And you've given us... Let's leave that a second, because we are tight. I bought this jewelry. It's sitting in a safe in my shop. Right? So I've done 100% shmium. Ula is sitting mamash in the safe, locked up. The alarm people are happy. The insurance people are happy. And there's an armed robbery in the night. They break in and they clear out my safe. And in the clear out, they take this jewelry. What's that locker? Shemesacha. Shemesach is type Geneva Veta. What happens if it's an oinus? It's a Geneva can oinus, then you'll be potter. Let's say it's a mamish oinus. It's got nothing to do with me. It's mamish oinus. His jewelry disappears. Right? So what happens? Legally, if this term is really enforceable, I can go back to him and say, I'm very happy to pay you for the item if you're going to give me the product. But you haven't given me yet the product because I haven't bought it yet. Right? This means I don't own this product till I pay for it. Fine, I'm not paying for it, and unfortunately it was your item which was stolen. I have no harm there that the courts would uphold that. I don't believe it for a second. I think everybody understands that really you've got this item and it's yours, and just, I don't know.
If I give it to an approval?
That's something else completely.
What,
no, that means whenever you decide you want it, then it's yours.
I can do the same thing with the payment. You don't pay me, I'm taking it back. Same thing. Why am I maintaining balance?
No. Because I'll tell you why not. Because here, I've already sold it to someone else. I still haven't paid. It means it's still not mine. There, on approval, whenever I decide I want it so that I can sell it, it becomes mine. And now I can sell it. It's mine to sell. But if it says that it's not mine till I pay, I haven't paid another 6 months after I sold it. It's already changed hands how many times, and you're telling me it still belongs to this first person. I don't know. To me, it doesn't make sense. But if it does make sense, then there's a heter. Why? Let me explain. The problem we outlined was that if a person is paying at a later date a higher fee, then we said it's a problem, because really halachically you're mechuyev to pay upon receipt when you get the item. So that means that paying at a later date at a higher fee means really the shopkeeper is, so to speak, lending you back the money. He's giving you credit for the item, and for that he's charging you a higher price. Now, if you say that this clause in the invoice actually makes sense, and that's quite a big if it makes sense, then what it's saying is, no, if you take it now and pay now, then the price is £100, that's up the price. If you take it and pay in 6 months, you're not buying it now, it's not yours now, it's only yours in 6 months. That means that you don't owe any money till 6 months, because I haven't done a kinyan. The whole shaydah is only if I do a kinyan now and pay then, there's a halvor. If all I've done is I've taken it home, I've taken it to my shop, and I'll decide whether I want to sell it. And whenever I pay, that's when I pay a higher price, but only then do I have to take possession. So if this clause doesn't make sense, then possibly it's a heter. Look upon him, we've run out of time. There's just one other line I'd like to say, mamash, in a line. I don't think we covered Sobso, I couldn't remember if we covered Sobso, but to summarize Silver Sobso in one line, which is really not doing it justice, the main case where Sobso is relevant is money. A sobaso means, let's really boil it down to the actual halacha. If in England, I lend somebody dollars, and I want them to pay me back dollars in England is like an item. It's not a currency, it's a pay. It's not tiva, it's pay. It's like an item. So if I lend someone dollars today, Chazal are worried that the dollar will go up in value, and at a time when he pays me back $100, it's as if he's paying me back more. The halacha is, sobaso is mutter if yeshloi, if he's got, and if he's got means even if he's got $1. So I know I really haven't done this justice, but just as advice, if you ever want to borrow money of a different currency here in England, what you have to make sure is that the person who's borrowing the money has at least one unit of that currency, whether it's a dollar or a yen or a euro, it doesn't make a difference, one unit of that currency before you lend it to him, and then you're fine. Then you can peg it at that currency. If he doesn't, send him one unit of that currency. But make sure he's got one unit of that currency, and then Mitzvah, you're fine. Baruch Hashem, we've managed to go through quite a number of the Ikar Halachos of Hilchos Ribis. Now, if we accept upon ourselves to at least look at ourselves to see where we possibly might have potentially assume, then Hashem, we should be zeich to have a good year.